at his warehouse door. "You're late."
"I'm sorry," Mop said.
"Where is Razika?"
But Tioz must have seen the answer on Mop's face, for his lips pursed, and his hand went to his moustaches, grown long with children, as if he were trying to make a ward against the loss of them at the sight of Mop's bad luck.
"I'm sorry, Mapios."
Mop shook his head.
"I want to use your handcart. I can fetch her and bring her back."
"Bring her back?" Tioz looked surprised. "She's bramble-kissed, no?"
Mop hesitated.
"You haven't given her the mercy cut yet?"
"She's my sister."
"She's bramble-kissed," Tioz insisted.
"You can't be thinking that we'll keep her here, in the warehouse."
"She wouldn't make a sound." Tioz gave him a sharp look.
"I have enough trouble with pests without a bramble body. What will people say?"
"They don't have to know."
"Tongues wag, boy. They have no way of knowing, and yet still they wag. And when the velvet ones up on Malvia Hill hear that Tioz keeps bramble bodies with his spices, what will they do? They'll tell their house managers to order cardamom from Zalati House, or Mistress Charis. And then where am I? A warehouse full of spices, and a bramble body that attracts rats, and my own children starving."
"I'll keep her clean."
"Talk sense, boy. I let you and your sister live here because Dalmadey did me good turns when Alakan was still a city. I do you good turns, even when my wife tells me to shove you across the river to live with the rest of the Alakana refugees. I let you stay, and I feed you because I remember what your family once was. But I'm not so rich that I can simply make trouble for myself. If you and your sister can keep an eye on my warehouse, and ensure that my cinnamon and Laura flower don't whisper out the door, then we all benefit. But bring a bramble body home, and invite the wagging tongues that go with that."
Tioz shook his head.
"You ask too much."
"Just for a little while. Until I find a place for her."
"A place for her? You'll sell her to a soft-eyed man?"
"No."
"There is no place for her then."
Tioz jerked his head toward the river Sulong.
"I cannot endanger my family for a bramble body. Go out and make the mercy cut, or leave her for the dogs, or do what you will."
He gripped Mop's shoulder.
"I'm sorry, Mapios. She's gone. I won't drag my family down because she was careless in her work."
"You'd do it for Mila," Mop protested. "If Rain were your daughter, you'd keep her safe. You wouldn't talk about mercy cuts. You'd keep her safe."
But Tioz wouldn't be moved, and he wouldn't give the card, and he wouldn't let a bramble body near.
"It would destroy me," he said.
And though Mop wanted to blame the man and hate him, he knew Tioz was right. Mop knew, too, that he would betray him. 4. Mop woke in the darkness of Tioz's spice warehouse, amongst sacks of dried chilies and powdered turmeric and cinnamon. A familiar home, even if it was less than what they had enjoyed before.
Rain.
In his exhaustion, he had fallen asleep, waiting for Tioz to close his doors to the last of the Malvia Hill buyers. It had been torture to wait for Tioz to finally take himself off to his wife and supper and bed in the upper floors of the house. And now Rain was out there in the darkness, alone and undefended. Mop scrambled off his accidental bed. He grabbed the cart that Tioz used to haul spice sacks up from the Sulong docks.
He'd been so stupid. How could he have fallen asleep?
Rain could already be gnawed by dogs. A scavenger for the pleasure houses might have hauled her away to those places where soft-eyed men bought the flesh of warm girls who could not protest their worst advances. Sick with horror for his sister, Mop dragged the cart over to the bolted doors. As he set his hand upon the iron latches, Mop wondered briefly if he should feel some guilt that he now defied the one person amongst all his father's old contacts who had been willing to care for orphans who fled out of Alakan.
"It's for Rain," he whispered, and crushed his guilt.
Rain was the last of his relations. Without her, Dalmadai was nothing, and he would be alone. They were nearly all gone.
She's already gone,
an unwelcome voice reminded him. It sounded like Lisley, hounding him still, speaking with the wisdom of someone who had seen too many fall into bramble sleep. Mop ignored it. How could he not go to her? How could anyone turn their back on a loved one who looked so alive, who was still warm to the touch, even as she never opened her eyes or inhaled another breath? Mop knew that desperation and hope made fools of bramble-kissed families, and yet he saw now how the foolishness gripped him as well. It was just as it had been with the apothecaries who cared for his mother and promised his distraught father that, with patience, and perhaps one more application of salve, she might be revived. Just one more drop of emerald philtre on her tongue, and one more offering of coin and incense to Mara's three faces, and Mother would rise again, and Mop and Rain would have their family again. Mop had known the apothecary for a liar, even if his father had not, and yet now he found himself in the same trap, and knew that he would follow his father's example to the very bitterest of ends. He would try to save Rain. He would protect her and seek a cure. And if she could not be cured now, then perhaps later. The only certain thing was death. Everything else was possibilities. The cart's wooden wheels rattled on the cobbles, breaking Kaim's midnight quiet. Alarms announcing him as a thief and a traitor to Teos. Mop eased the cart over each bump in the uneven alley, fighting the urge to simply dash away. Fighting to go slowly enough that he wouldn't wake the man and his family where they slumbered overhead. The cart creaked and thumped and rattled, and Mop murmured entreaties to Kamaz.
"Please let them keep sleeping. Please let them keep sleeping,"
praying to the dog-headed protector of children and innocence that Teos would not suddenly appear in the open windows above the warehouse and name Mop for the thief he was.
"I'm coming, Rain," Mop whispered. "I'm coming."
He reached the mouth of Spice Alley and sped his pace, following twists and turns through Kaim's narrow streets, hurrying across emptied market squares and past lonely fountains. Down more narrow turnings between the high walls of merchant villas, taking advantage of every shortcut that would allow the cart to pass. Soldiers emerged from the darkness, their red and gold livery of mayor and magister gleaming. And with them, a shadow man came striding, a black-robed sensori. He too bore the mark of the mayor and magister. Gold-crossed axe and staff, bright on his black velvet. But from his hands, his true mark of office hung. A censer, swinging pendulously on a copper chain. The censer swung rhythmically, the face of Borzai the judge engraved on each of its sides. Borzai's slitted eyes gleamed fiercely, lit by flickering blue flames within, and the god's open mouth issued a steady stream of smoke. The smoke drifted about the black-robed sensori and his retinue, filling the alley as they quested. It tested windows and doors. It rose to quest through open upper balconies. It pried at shuttered storefronts. The smoke enveloped Mop. Scents of neem and mint, cloying and close. The sensori eyed Mop, and Mop was suddenly seized with an animal terror, that he himself was about to glow, that some magic he had cast years ago still stained his skin or tangled in his hair, that the stink of it was still on him. The sensori and the mayor's soldiers passed on, their eyes following the smoke where it trailed, pausing occasionally to see how it twisted and pooled within the alley. The smoke slowly dissipated. Mop sighed with relief and went on himself, rattling through the city gates and out into the fields beyond. In the summer heat, barley and wheat were growing high. Apricot trees and figs lined the edges of farmers' holdings. He walked the main road out of Caim, and then cut off along small paths, winding between farmers' fields, and heading east for the bramble wall. Moonlight turned the growing fields bright. Crickets soared at the darkness, and wooden water wheels creaked and turned, spilling water down dozens of sluices, irrigating the crops. In the distance, Duke Malabaz's villa stood, high, thick walls and small windows. A supporting cluster of hovels huddled close by it, but they were all asleep, and it was quiet except for the trickling of water. Harvest time was still far off, so there was no need for farmers to guard their fields against theft. Mop was alone. Ahead, the bramble wall loomed. The sense of ash and burn thickened as Mop approached the newly cleared fields of Malabaz's expanded holdings. In times past, the bramble wall had always marched closer to the city, but now, under the iron hand of Magister Skax and his sensori, few people dared loose magic upon the world. The mayor's axe hung too low and fell too eagerly. When Mop complained of the horror of the mayor and magister and their eager executioners, Teos had raised an eyebrow. "You complain now, but you didn't see what it was like before the sensori and all the sentry braziers were raised," Teos said. "Instead of neem and mint, Caim smelled of fear. Every day we found bramble, even inside the city walls, even inside my own home, even inside my bags of spice. Before Skax, there was no hope. We knew we'd fall, just like in Pais and Alakem and Jantpara so long ago. It's an ugly thing to watch your city die, like watching a child starve. It's ugly, and there's nothing that you can say to make it beautiful. You think blue flames and sniffing smokes are bad? I tell you, it's better than waking in the morning and finding a bramble sprouting in your turmeric. You think leaving all the magic to the magister is bad? Try watching Lesser Caim burn yet again. Instead, he burns pikins, pillars of fire. I've seen it." "But you can't even make a small healing," Mop had pointed out. "My mother knit my feet when I was born. 2 club feet when I birthed, and she whispered healing in my ear and made me walk." He stuck out his legs to demonstrate. "Now look, 2 good feet. 2 good feet that carried you away when Alakan fell, thanks to your mother's spelling." "It was only small magic," Mop said. "Every Alakana says so," Tio said. "Small magic here, small magic there, and now all the Alakanas live in Caim, and Bramble has swallowed Alakan entirely."
"But still, how many feet could Skax heal if he didn't want a life in the sky?"
Rain piped up, pointing at the Magister's castle, where it floated high above the city.
"Most people only need a little magic to live, but he keeps it all for himself and his friends."
Tioza's expression turned angry, as if Rain had taken a knife and cut off his moustaches.
"Shut up, Alakana! You know nothing. At least we don't flee our city. Here in Caim, we push Bramble back."
Mop had jostled Rain, and she'd fallen silent, though she'd still looked peeved at being silenced by a man who would have been a servant to them both in past times. Anyway, Teos had been right, or at least right enough. Even if the people of Caim were all huddled down like whipped dogs, afraid to use even the smallest magics, Teos was right about the bramble. Where it had been close, it was now miles distant from the city, and more was being burned back every day. Mop dragged the cart through soft, ashy dirt, sweating in the night's humidity. Ahead, the bramble wall loomed out of the night mists, vast and high. Malevolent woods tangled and thick. A few large trunks still gutted with fire from the day's work. Beacon fires marking the war that would never end. Mop cast about for rain. A lump of darkness led him toward a muddy patch, but it was only a cauldron of cured paste for the burn master's pig bladders.
He turned and continued searching.
Where was Rain? The darkness made the fields unfamiliar. At last, in the distance, he saw the cottage that they'd been excavating from Bramble's embrace that morning, and he realized that he was in the wrong place. He trudged toward the cottage, eyes searching the furrows and divots of the burned land. She wasn't anywhere to be found. Mop fought the familiar urge to call out for her. He wanted to order her to come out from hiding, just as he used to when she hid amongst the rose and laura in their mother's night garden, in the hopes of ambushing him as he walked by. He widened his search, stomping through the newly cleared land, raising charcoal and ash in the hot night air, clouds in moonlight. Back and forth, hither and yon, Mop searched until at last he was sure of what he had been denying. Someone had taken her. It made sense. All the burn crews had seen her fall. Any one of them could have returned ahead of him to retrieve her body, and then taken her to be sold. Your fault. Lisley had told him to give Rain the mercy cut, but he'd been so stubbornly certain that death was worse than sleep. He'd been wrong. There were dozens of fates that were worse than a fast cut and bleeding out in innocent sleep. He'd been a fool to think he could protect her. A fool to try to save her from something that no one had ever survived. And if he was honest, he had been selfish to think not of Rain's protection, but instead of his own lonely isolation in a city that hated their kind. He should have sent her on to Borzai, and thence to Kamaz, in his safe and happy hall. That would have been true mercy, and he had failed her. "I'll find you, Rain," he whispered, as he stood alone in the blackened fields. "I swear I'll find you, and when I do, I'll do my duty as I should have done from the start. I swear to Borzai, I swear I'll deliver you to Kemaz's halls as I should have done. And may Borzai send me to the Demon King and his brides if I fail."
5.
"You want girls?" the woman asked. The alley was dim, lit only by the vitreous glow of pleasure house lanterns, Naya's colors, dangling in long, flickering chains outside the doors. The best of the pleasure houses twinkled with fine Teresian glass, much like the Dalmadei had traded during their glory days in Alakan. But here, in the braided alleys of Lesser Chaim, there were other pleasure houses and other pleasure lanterns, and the alley stank of vomit. Rats jostled the shadows. The orange glass of the pleasure houses was as lumpy and bubbled as if it had been fashioned by the hooves of goats. The woman came down the steps, smiling. Mop stepped back, fighting an almost overwhelming urge to flee. He had come all this way, first returning into the spice alley with Tioz's cart, and then setting off in darkness across the Mayor's Bridge to Lesser Chaim. It was late now, hellishly so. Yet this woman called to him, still alert, still hungry. "I have girls," she crooned. "I have women. I have fat breasts, heavy with milk. I have slim girls, so delicate they could be made of spun sugar. I have boys, lithe and sweet with full lips. I have men like bulls."
Mop swallowed. "I'm not looking for that."
"We have the smoking waters of Atsila, and the wines of Dream. We have Kemroot, and the darkness and light of poppy sap. Borzai cares not what is done here. Here, he closes his ever-watching eyes. Here, you may drink deep of Naya's waters, and she will fill your empty places."
"I'm not looking for those things."
The woman laughed, low and encouraging. "I know you're not lost. No one who wanders into Naya's arms is lost. You come for your hungers. Let me satisfy them.
Let me give you joy. She beckoned. I am not your mother. I am not your master. I am not your patriarch. I am not your god. Tell me your hidden heart desires, and I will feed you joy. Speak in Naya's ear, and she will give.
The dolls. Mop swallowed again. I want to see the dolls.
Ah. The woman smiled. It's hard to say those words the first time, isn't it? Hard to admit how much we hunger for girls as warm as life and more giving than Mara. I can take you to the beauties. I can take you to the place you need.
Is it far?
Not far, she said, smiling. She held out a hand. The dolls of Janpra are warm as life, and yet live to muffle their complaints. They are true abandon.
She cupped his hand in her own.
They are your hungers, unbounded. Come with me. Naya is no Borzai. She does not judge.
The woman was pulling him from the well-lit lane down a darker alley, down into darkness. Mop was suddenly afraid that she was leading him to cutthroats, but he was at a loss as to whether he should follow or flee.
Is it far? He asked again.
Not as far as the distance you've already travelled.
Her body brushed against his, softness swaying under silk.
Do not fear the path. I will help you find your match.
Her hand slid up his hip.
Just as Mop sought to pull away, she said, Here. She tugged him up shadowed steps. An iron and plank door creaked. Orange light spilled out. A broad, muscled man loomed in the frame, arms crossed, shadowed face brooding.
There, there, Rixus. It's only Amina and a customer.
The guard stepped aside. A statue of Borzai waited within, its eyes blindfolded with a bit of silk. The judge's many hands were filled with tokens.
Pay the judge, Amina whispered in his ear. The smallest bit you like.
Mop put a cut copper in the girl's hand. The huge guard nodded, satisfied, and closed the door. Amina led Mop into the pleasure house, following twisting halls, pushing past men and women, heads close and murmuring, their eyes following the new arrivals. Groans of sex issued from behind curtains. Gaps in silk showed sliver glimpses of dim coitus, flexing shadows and slick skin shimmering in candlelight. The smell of excitement and sweat and poppy filled the halls. A man pushed past Mop, so intent he didn't nod or apologize at Mop's jostling. A soft-eyed man, Mop realized. And not just one. All of them were soft eyes, men who sought girls like rain. More twisting halls, more curtains, more soft-eyed men. A whole city of them contained within a maze of smoke and curtains. Amina opened a door to reveal a huge room, lanterns flickering, casting shadows and light. It was filled with dolls.
Hundreds of dolls. Welcome to Naya's dream chamber, Amina whispered, running her hands up to his shoulders. Tell me what you desire.
The dolls lay stacked upon the floor, piled by age and size. Girls and women, nude and clothed, wealthy and poor. Boys and men on another wall, tangled stacks and mounds of them splayed and discarded.
Ah, you like the girls, Amina murmured. Tell me what you need, and we will seek. Do you like the young or the old? The straw-haired or the raven? There are many.
Mop stared at the piled bodies, shocked at the number. He saw a girl in the leather stitch of a bramble worker, a black web of hair spilling from her hood. He ran to her with a cry. But when he knelt beside her and turned her to meet his gaze, a stranger's face greeted him. Amina crouched beside him. She ran her hand over the girl's face, tidying the raven hair.
You like her?
Mop shook his head, wordless with disappointment, but Amina took his silence for something else.
Let's take a look at her, shall we?
She plucked at the girl's ties, and the leather jerkin fell away, showing creamy flesh. She offered no protest as Amina bared her. Amina took Mop's hand and placed it upon the girl's breast.
Feel how warm she is, she whispered. Feel how she will please you.
Her other hand slipped to Mop's breeches, fumbling for his penis. Mop scrambled away.
I don't want this!
Amina looked confused.
You said you wanted dolls.
I want my sister. I am looking for my sister.
Oh! Amina laughed. You want your sister?
She swept her arm.
Pick anyone you like, and she'll be your sister. She'll love you as you've always dreamed she would, and she will no longer fight you.
No, I don't want her like that. That's not what I mean.
You have no need of protest here.
Amina wagged a sly finger.
Borzai does not see us, and does not judge our hungers. This is Naya's abode. This is a place for desire, not for judgment.
She captured his hand again, leading him amongst the piled bodies.
Come, look close.
She lifted another girl by the hair, turning her limp head for Mop's evaluation. When Mop failed to respond, she dropped the girl with a thump and went on to another.
We'll find your sister for you, she said. Is she slender like this one, or do her breasts sway lush like this one here? Tell me her look, and we'll find her likeness.
She propelled Mop to look.
Inspect to your pleasure. Some men love to simply look and imagine their pleasure, but you, when we've found your perfect match, imagine how you'll kiss her warm lips and thrust between her parted thighs.
She pointed at the sprawled girls. Silk shifts, leather bramble jerkins, nude splayed limbs.
Any of these dolls would be happy to play your sister. But don't worry if none of these match your desire. We have more.
She went to a curtain and drew it aside, revealing another doorway. Beyond it, men turned, startled like cockroaches exposed to light, all of them caught in their hunt through more bodies that lay in piles and drifts beyond.
There are many choices, Amina said.
The warren of rooms went on and on, each one full of bramble sleeping bodies and the soft-eyed men who sought to gorge on them. The living men who fed with Kapala's appetites, all of them feverish to gorge on a pliancy that they could not beg or steal or cajole from their daily lives.
Mop turned back the way he had come, breaking into a run.
Don't run, little lord. Amina's voice pursued him. I can find your sister. I can give you a harem of sisters if you tell me the look and shape. I will find them all for you. Your soft eyes are welcome here.
Mop fled, slamming into patrons, bumping past whores. Rain was in here somewhere. He needed to stop the soft-eyed men from taking her. He began yanking curtains aside. Men floundered and grunted atop yielding bodies. Men brandished ropes. Men lifted curved blades, steel dripping black under orange lantern light. Men fed like Kapala's children. But none of them threatened rain. More curtains, more chambers. Fluid-smeared and broken dolls lay in corners, trash to be thrown into the sulong before dawn.
There are always more.
Amina's words whispered in his mind, telling him how little anyone cared for bramble bodies. More and more rooms, and more bodies, and more of the soft-eyed men.
Rain!
His sister lay beneath a thrusting man. Mop dragged him away, only to discover that it was not Rain who was abused, but some boy with soft features, the wrong hair and the wrong face, and a history he did not know.
But now the soft-eyed man was shouting outrage and reaching for a knife. Mop fled again. In the hall, he slammed into another man hauling a naked girl slung over his shoulder. They all three fell in a tangle, the man shouting, the girl's limbs tangling them both in perverse embrace.
"You broke her head!" the man shouted. "You broke her head! I don't want one with a broken head!"
Rixus loomed, joined by other bouncers. They dragged Mop easily.
"Rain!"
Mop shouted as they dragged him out.
"Rain!"
Knowing she couldn't hear, and yet calling anyway. The bouncers hurled him into the alley. Their fists rained down, and their sandals stamped his ribs. They beat him bloody on the cobbles. His lips split, and his teeth shattered. And still they beat him, until all that issued from his mouth was a whisper.
"Rain."
He lay still. From the shadows, rats and blood beetles and gutter dogs watched, waiting to see if he would survive, or if he would become like all the other sleeping ones who were piled in the darkest alleys, the ones who lay warm and pliant, even as their blood gushed hot into the mouths of Kapala's children. 6. Mop woke to rats chewing at his toes. With a cry, he kicked them away. The sky overhead was turning pink with dawn. Magister Skax's castle gleamed with the kiss of the sun, a diamond floating against the sky, shining. Mop dragged himself upright. The rats watched with interest, seemingly trying to decide if they still might rush him and make a meal. He staggered to his feet, leaned against a rough stone wall. The rats gave up and scuttled away, leaving him alone in the alley. Mop spat out a shard of tooth.
"Rain."
He retched dry, feeling the bruise of his ribs.
"Rain."
She deserved better than whatever his selfish mercy had doomed her to. He had a duty to cut her throat with honor, to make offerings to Borzai on her behalf, so that she could go quickly into the safe and happy halls of Kamaz. And yet she was lost to him. Mop stared up at Magister Skax's castle, gleaming high. The palace of a man who held power to himself and kept it jealously.
"There is a way," a voice whispered in his mind. "There are ways of finding needles in haystacks."
Mop remembered his father casting simple spells, quick and furtive, the sulphur whiff of magic cast, filling a room and dispersing. He remembered his father spelling a writing quill, remembered how the point had turned slowly, as if imbued with a life of its own. His father had spelled the quill to seek, and it had divined a true path to a lost contract, finding where it had been tucked away with papers regarding a shipment from Turris. A small thing, a quick thing. Tiny, useful, inconsequential magic. Mop didn't know any spells. His father had told him that it wasn't something to be done casually, or to be assumed that it didn't have its cost. A magister's tutelage was frowned upon by the time Mop came of age, and so he hadn't been taught. But his father had grown in a different time, before Alakan was threatened so greatly by Bramble. He'd had the knowledge, and with a small spelling, very nearly a child's trick, he had built friendship between quill and contract. A small thing, a simple thing, if one had the spine to face the executioner's axe. Mop limped slowly out of the silent alley to join the city's morning bustle. He wandered, seeking, stumbling through Kaim across the river's broken jumble of tent cities and newly rebuilt houses, through horse markets and manure, pushing between men who beaded their mustaches in the style of M'Pais, and widowed Alakan women who still wore rings on three fingers, man, woman, child, for the faces of Mara. It was an odd thing to walk amongst his own people once again, to smell Alakan-style peppers on a griddle, frying, stuffed with potato, to remember how Cook had made similar concoctions, to smell the spices and see his people huddled low. If not for Tyoza's kindness, Mop would have lived among them too, another Alakana refugee, shoved from his home when the bramble came crashing over the spring city's walls. Mop wasn't sure what he was looking for, but he thought he would know it when he saw it. There were whispers of such places. Much like the dollhouses, there were other whispered places. And Kaim across the river was the place to hunt. He wandered through marketplaces. The travel market, where copper goods came in on caravans from the west. Now that Kersh was lost to bramble. The covered markets of cotton and silk. The bulk vegetable markets with bitter melon and spine fruit and chilies laying in drifts. At last he found a simple stall, tangled amongst all the others, dried sulong ripplefish on one side, reeking of salt and rot, smoked cats on the other. All the stalls sweltering under the market's sagging, shading cattle hides. The heat under the hides was overwhelming. The sense of dry fish and sweat and mint tea pressing and mingling, adding to Mop's misery from the night's beating and lack of food or water for breakfast. The stall sold apothecary supplies, tiger penises and kestrel wood shavings, bat skins and rat tails, serpent bile in jewel jars of yellow and green, chests of tiny drawers lined each side of the man's carpet, draped with the skulls of rats on strings, polished white. Dung beetles in jars, climbing and falling back. Cassis flies. Mop lingered. The apothecary eyed him.
What do you want, boy?
His accent was Alakan, but his contempt might as well have come down from the top of Malvia Hill. Mop stared at the man, thinking how he would have bowed and begged for Mop's business in earlier times, then shoved down the thought.
I'm looking for necessities, Mop said,
then hesitated.
And instructions.
Necessities.
Mop leaned close.
I want magic, he murmured.
The man flinched and made a warning sign.
I sell trinkets and medicines. I traffic not in the thing you want.
I have money.
The apothecary laughed.
Yes? So you'll buy my head and sew it back atop my shoulders after Scatz's executioner is done with me?
Is there no way of convincing you differently?
Mop whispered soothingly.
No payment? No favor? Nothing?
The man's eyes went to the crowds jostling past.
What if it's true? He said. What if I told you it was possible still? That with the right words and right necessities, it is possible to summon the powers of lost Janthbra.
His gaze fell upon Mop. All attention now. Predatory.
How much would you pay if I told you so?
Mop goggled. He didn't know the proper price or proper barter.
I trust you to name your fair price.
I want 3 in silver, 3 in gold, 3 in copper cash.
That's all I have, Mop protested. And all I want is a simple spelling. It's nothing but a child's spell.
A simple spell, or a spell as black and convoluted as the heart of Takaz. It makes no difference to me, for it will make no difference to our dear Magister Skax.
Magic is magic, and the cost is your head if he finds out.
3 and 3 and 3, he said. Or nothing is what you get.
Reluctantly, Mop cut the cash from his string and handed across the coins. The man weighed the money in his hand.
Come in back.
The apothecary pushed aside a curtain and led Mop deeper into his tent, crowding into a niche claustrophobic with a desk and ledgers and loose papers, and overhung by clacking garlands of children's backbones. He squeezed behind the desk and dug under his business ledgers, eventually drew out a cracked and broken tome, pages spilling from within.
What is the power you desire?
I'm seeking my sister.
Finding, then.
He started turning the crackling pages of the tome, each one a brown, fragile leaf.
Finding, hunting, seeking, desiring, pining, hungering, missing, finding. Finding, finding, finding.
He lifted a page and examined it in the light of his oil lamp.
Magisters were always losing things. Losing friends, and losing lives. Losing apprentices and familiars and floating castles. And of course, losing their empire. Finding.
He looked up from the page.
I don't have all the spells of Janthbro. Just one book. Just one hand. Magistra Calaia's, and not her largest tome by far.
How does this matter?
You know Calaia. You know the histories.
Mop shrugged.
My father thought it best not to teach such things.
Calaia was a terrifying magistra. One of the most powerful. From a bloodline that stretched back to Jandbra's founding. Yanak Gur first, and the gods, of course, before them. So she had that history in her blood. The rise of Jandbra from the blessings of Mara, with all three faces. A lot of power there.
Calaia wielded Jandbra's armies in the north, and helped crush the forest clans. It said she wore the skin of the Rala that she hunted, and ate with her troops when they were cut off from aid in the Kestrel forests for more than a year. The soldiers were so loyal to her that the Emperor feared her, and eventually had her put to death by Halsak. But even then, she lived on.
The apothecary shrugged.
She was powerful.
How does this help or hinder me?
Mop asked.
The apothecary tapped the tome. This is one of her books. Not by her hand direct, but a copy by her apprentice Torizzi. And a good one. But it is but one, and it is but a sliver off the cheese of the knowledge she kept for herself in her floating villa by the sea. When she died, her villa crashed to rubble. And now, only a slice of a portion of a bit of a crumb of her knowledge remains. It's just as it is for all the magisters, and their many books, and their many spellings that are lost to us. We have lost the variations, the pianissimo and the adagio, the pacings and the volume of their spellings. We are children, where they were gods. And so we pick through their spellings and toy with the primers of their least apprentices who managed to flee from Jantpara's fall and the Bramble onslaught. There is power in the surviving books. But the truth is that the magisters that survive today are nothing in comparison to the gods who ruled in Jantpara and spread empire across sea and desert and mountain and plain.
Except Magister Skax, Mop said. Skax is different.
Skax!
The man laughed.
You think Skax is powerful? Because he creates a castle that floats in the air and stitches the pieces and parts of his enemies into loyal followers?
No. Skax is nothing in comparison to what was lost. Skax is but a child.
He continued paging through the tome.
The finest magisters of Jandbara cast spelling with no effort in the least, without book or ingredients. They simply pressed their will upon the world.
Skax is not so much when compared to that.
He frowned as he continued examining pages.
Calaia liked her battle magics. She burned men from within, and froze them brittle so that they shattered when her troops struck them with their swords.
She turned iron swords to sheaves of wheat. She changed the nature of things, hot to cold, stone to water. Her power was great, but from her hand I have but this tome. And it is a trove, but it is not the ideal. Ah! He paused. This will do. The apothecary took down a quill and began scratching. It is a spell to see the things which may be hidden. Kalaia used it for detecting ambush, but with modification it will do. Even better, this was much concerned with finding people. Is it different for things? Is a dog different from a cat, different from your sister? The man was scratching more notes. He studied his writings, then pushed it across. Can you read? Of course I can. Some can't, I only ask. These are Kalaia's instructions. Mop studied the words. Why are you giving this to me? The man smiled. You think I'll risk the sensori? You think I wish to see myself lit up like a Cassis fly? You think I most desire to become another head on a spike on the walls, with my body floating down under the mayor's bridge? I have no desire to visit the sea, most surely not without my head attached. If you wish to play at Halzak Squares with Magister Skax, that is your business. I give instructions. I sell necessities. I do not ply the Magister's trade. It's dangerous enough to simply share the memories of Jantpara's fallen names. Dangerous enough to simply admit that some of us still touch the hand of our ancestors. Magister Skax is jealous for memories like the one you hold in your hand. He is desirous of every Magister's power. See how many Magisters he has sent to Borzai's judgment. But, he wagged a finger, always our Magister is careful to keep his victims' hands. Their heads go on the gates, their bodies float down the river so long. But their fine quill hands, those he traces with his own, and he learns from all the dead. So even if one does not turn a tongue to the curse of Jandbra, our Magister is watching. And he is hungry for whatever traces of a Magistra's hand that still remain. He gave Mop a small leather bag, filled it with ingredients. These will do the thing that you desire, but do your spelling far from me, and know that if you invoke the lost glories of Jandpra, that you invoke also its great curse. 7. Mop cast the seeking spell from hiding, burrowed deep amongst sacks of Tioza's dried spices. The instructions of the dead hand of Magistra Kalaia lay before him, her gestures, her invocations, her words upon his lips, as if the long-dead woman blossomed and rose up within him, animating him with her power. Mop began whispering words of magic, feeling the Magistra's influence from ages past. In its own way, the thing he did now was every bit as dark and shameful as the acts of the soft-eyed men from whom he sought to save Rain. This was the business of secrecy and shame and fear. This looking over one's shoulder, this terror of discovery, this rot of transgression. Mop traced his fingertips from a black strand of Rain's hair to a comb that was one of her last personal belongings. The comb was a treasured thing, a memento of her own private obsessions and desires, bejeweled and made of bone, sharp tines carefully carved by a woman who specialized in such things, back when Alakan's walls hadn't been overcome by bramble growth. Rain's last treasured luxury, from a time when their lives had been soft and comfortable, held to her, even as their lives fell to rags. Mop could feel power building as he traced a hand from the hair to the comb and back,
a gathering of something greater than himself.
Humming quietly, holding Kalaia's words inside his head, Mop dipped his fingers in water and carried it to the turmeric he had scooped from Tioza's sacks. The water dripped, tiny, gleaming jewels in candlelight. He rubbed his fingertips into the spice, turning the water and spice into a staining paste. He plucked up Rain's hair and ran it through, dipped the comb in the paste as well, coating its tines.
The magistra's words bubbled within him. He barely had to look at the parchment where the apothecary had written them. His lips knew the vowels and consonants. His tongue felt thick with the need to speak them.
The words had their own urgency. Kalaia's voice, filling his chest, his lungs, burning his tongue, spilling from his lips.
Words issued forth, sibilant, building, exultant, rising. A spelling, a true spelling, full of ancient power.
Mop threaded his sister's hair through the comb, running it thrice between the tines, and then he took the hair and burned it in the oil lamp.
Smoke rose. The hair sizzled and curled and burned away. Spice and rain and the whispers of his words. The acrid sulfur scent of magic coalesced around him, summoned and bound. The flush of power was almost overwhelming.
This was what it was to spell. No wonder the magisters of Jantbara had been unable to stop.
Mop's voice rose, a thrumming chant.
The power was too much.
He was full of it. The flush was too fine, the pleasure too decadent.
The chant began to crest. Power poured from his voice into the comb, where he waved it above the flame, sifting the smoke of Rain's burned hair. His voice rose to an ecstatic shout. The comb flipped out of his hand. It hit the floor, skittered about on the flagstones, flopping like a fish, first one way, then another, a thing alive and out of place, trying to find its home and direction. It leaped into the air and shot across the room, smacked against granite stonework. It quivered against the wall, and then, slowly, it began sliding along the stones. Scraping, prying, seeking a crack in the door. The comb jammed itself into the crack, wedging itself, forcing deeper, quivering and eager to find its target.
Mop barely managed to grab hold as it sank deeper into the gap. With a grunt, he hauled it back.
The comb shook and twisted in his hands, slippery and sly, threatening at every moment to fly free.
It trembled with the power he had imbued into it,
a thing that was supposed to find ambush. And to what?
Mop's fingers weakened with the strain of holding back the comb.
What had Kalaia done when she sought her ambushers in the kestrel forests of old? Had she spelled something as innocuous as a comb?
Or had she spelled arrows and sent them ahead of her, flying like angry wasps?
The comb trembled malevolently in his hands. Mop dragged it close, pinned it under his arm, then opened the door. He peered outside. The night was black and still and hot.
If he was careful, he would have to avoid the braziers and Sensori. But now was as good a time as any to go hunting.
The comb was dragging him already, lunging, jerking him out into the night, hauling him faster and faster as he fought to maintain his grasp on it.
The comb dragging him straight for Crooked Square and its sentinel braziers.
With all his might, Mop hauled the comb back and forced it down a different alley.
The comb fought him at every step, but he couldn't go close to the brazier smoke.
One kiss of smoke, and he'd be lit up blue. And everyone would be on him for the reward.
The comb dragged him on, faster and faster. Mop ran with it, stumbling to keep up as he was jerked around corners and galloped down alleys. The comb slammed him uncaring through the crowds on the streets, dragging him.
No! Ahead,
Ascensori and the Mayor's guard were coming down the street. Mop tried to turn back, but the comb kept dragging him closer. He didn't have enough strength to make it reverse course. Mop opted instead for pressing against the wall, praying to Kamaz for protection, begging the dog-headed one to push the heavy, humid air away from him as the Sensori stalked past. The winds were in his favor. If they held, he had a chance. The Sensori's feet were soft on the cobbles. Velvet sneaking shoes, inaudible amongst the tramp of the soldiers' boots who followed. His censer swung, pendulous. Smoke billowed from the bronze-cast snarl of Borzai's mouth. Blue flame flickered behind the judge's eyes, wicked slits. Smoke issued forth, and Mop watched it, terrified that it would blow in his direction and betray his guilt. The god seemed to stare into Mop's soul as the Sensori and the soldiers passed. The Sensori's eyes fell upon Mop. Mop ducked his head, showing respect, his hands so tight around the comb that he thought his flesh would bleed. Still the breezes favored him. Heart pounding with fear, Mop turned and began to shuffle away from the Sensori, his hands cramping with the effort of restraining the terrifying comb in its hungry hunt. He pushed past a cluster of drunken river boatmen, putting them between him and the Sensori, praying to Kamaz and Borzai and Mara and every god he could think of, praying for mercy, simply praying. The way was open ahead of him. "I'm going to make it," he realized. "I'm free of them." The wind shifted. Smoke blew over him. His hands blazed blue. The comb gave a sudden jerk, and it too glowed, bright as a star.
"Magic!" a soldier shouted. "There! Seize him in the name of Mayor and Magister!"
The boatman saw Mop blaze with blue light and made drunken grabs for him. Mop dodged and fled as above him shutters opened and people peered down to see the commotion. More drunks came out of the tavern, trying to trip him as he passed, cheering on the mayor's hounds. Mop skidded around a corner and collided with a woman carrying brasswares. Pots fell clattering on cobbles, ringing out. The comb skittered out of his sweat-slick hands.
"No!"
The comb ignored his anguished cry. Freed of his clutch, it arrowed down the street, then rose, arcing, flying high, a blue star rising. Mop followed it with his eyes, and then it was gone, over the rooftops. The soldiers came clattering around the corner.
"There he is!"
Mop ran, his whole body aglow with the evidence of his crime. He dodged and ducked, plunging past more jeering townspeople. He reached the city gate and dove through, rolling under the portcullis as it dropped. The gate slammed down behind him, trapping the soldiers on the other side. The soldiers cursed and shouted after him, as Mop plunged on, pounding out into the darkness of peasant fields, hating that the darkness that should have been his friend was now his enemy as the bright glow of magic marked him. Behind him, he could hear the soldiers raising the gate once more and attempting pursuit, slower in their armor, but dogged. Mop ran until his lungs were raw and his legs were as weak as grass stalks, and still he stumbled on. Ahead of him, the bramble wall loomed, black and tangled. A few tall, thorny trunks still guttered orange with flames, like torches lighting the walls of Mara's fortress before her last battle with the demon king, Takaz. Ahead, he spied the cottage that he and the bramble crews had been excavating from bramble not a day before. If he could hide within... Mop dove inside the chinkstone house, and tried to bury his glow in the loose dirt that had been worked by the bramble crews. In the distance he heard the guards calling, coming closer, stalking. Mop held his breath. If Kamaz favored him, he might hope to be missed. They might not see the cottage, or not dare to search it so close to bramble. Mop frantically piled more dirt atop himself. He felt a sting and jerked his hand back, He brushed at the stinging nettle, and was rewarded with a second sting. He froze. A pale strand glistened on his skin. Numbness tingled his face.